You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. In this episode, we are going to recap some of the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, tell you about the latest news around baseball, and of course, give all of you some streamer recommendations at the end of the show. But before we get into that good stuff, John, how's the week been?
It's been a little nerve-wracking in terms of fantasy baseball for me. I'm in the first round of my playoffs, and we still have technically another week to go because this playoff round ends the Sunday after the All-Star break. So got a few more games there. I'm currently up 8-4, which is nice, but it does not feel safe ever in the playoffs. And then I'm also in the Guillotine League through Pitcherlist, and I've basically survived the last two chops, just like kind of last, second to last or third to last, and I'm clearly the worst team in the group, but I'm hoping I can maybe eke out a win. We'll see. My team has always kind of performed just enough, but it's a little scary in Guillotine leading, especially with the All-Star break come up. It kind of feels like there's just gonna be 4 days where I'm just wondering, like, is my team any good? Am I gonna survive the weekend? So, a lot of fun high stakes fantasy baseball in the middle of July.
That's definitely nerve-wracking, especially because, once again, the viewers that haven't been listening for a while don't understand that your playoffs are so early in your home league that they might be like, wait, what? Playoffs? I'm in week 15. What are you doing?
Yep.
So it's definitely a strange thing to wrap your head around. Same here for me. It's a little bit nerve-wracking. I was in first for most of my home league, and now I kind of dropped down to second, and it's really close between the top, I don't know, five or six teams. But the problem is that, like, the rest of the league, the bottom half of the teams kind of sold off already for next season since it's a keeper league. You can trade draft picks. You can make some moves like that. So we've seen a lot of that in my home league, and it's kind of tipped the scales in balance of some of the other teams. And that's kind of hard to wrap your head around. I'm seeing a lot of lopsided victories, and hopefully I can get into the playoffs, and you never know, once the playoffs start, anything can happen, which hopefully for your playoffs, they go well and anything can happen good in your direction. That would be great. And in the Guillotine League, yeah, that's also a crazy thing. I still want to do one of those. It sounds like a lot of fun. But for my big money leagues, obviously my home league, already said I'm in second. And then I'm actually doing really well in a best ball double up league on NFBC. I believe I'm in second.
Nice.
Out of 12.
Okay.
So I think all you have to do is come top six to cash.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that's a great feeling. So I'm very happy about that. It's looking good. My roto team is excellent, so I'm super happy about that. And I still had some injuries too. Like, I had Bryce Harper. I had a few other guys that got injured, and they're just coming back. So the team is looking strong. So very happy with that. Glad to see that both of us are kind of succeeding. We have our fingers crossed right now because we're hoping things go well. But overall, it's going all right. TGFBI, different story, but everything else going well. How's your TGFBI going?
I'm pretty awful in TGFBI. Part of the issue, of course, is, well, both you and I, our number one picks got injured. So there's that. I also have not been paying the best attention to it on the waiver wires on Sundays. Partially because I'm just doing so poorly, there's just kind of less incentive to, you know, make your team better. It just feels like there's just too many holes to fill. And I've been kind of missing fab runs for the last month, which probably is not a great thing, but I'm also just, like, firmly not in a good place in TGFBI. So there's just less incentive for me to kind of try this year, even though last year I did finish top 100, I think.
Yeah, you did extremely well last year. And for me, I did all right, but not great. And then this season is just a disaster. This might be my worst finish yet. And I thought my team was pretty good. Obviously, I had the first pick and I had Acuna. So I was like, oh yeah, this is it. Finally going to come top 100, maybe top 50, maybe win the whole thing. Nope, not happening. I am on the complete opposite side of that. So not good.
Yeah, there was like a really fun moment, I think like a month into the season, where I was like top 50 or so, top 75 or something like that. And then my team has just taken an absolute nosedive since then.
Yeah, I think like 2 weeks into the season, I was like fifth overall, and now I'm like 385th overall. Like I added 380 spots on for no reason.
Yeah.
So it's not great, not happy about that, but sometimes that's just how it rolls. You can do all the prep, you can have all of the knowledge in the world. We are fantasy analysts at the end of the day as well. We're just fantasy players, and we do as much research as we can, and sometimes you fall short. So hopefully that's a little lesson for people out there listening that, hey, sometimes it's just not your year, and especially when you get out of just your home league, because I know most people listening and most people that play fantasy are really only in one league, and it's their home league with friends, or it might even be a public league. And you might dominate in that because you're probably going up against people that watch baseball or watch their favorite team but don't really know a lot about everyone around the league. And everyone has their own incentive and way to play. So maybe you are really good in that element. But sometimes when you remove yourself from that element and you go into, say, a big money league on NFBC or a TGFBI where you're against some of the best and brightest fantasy baseball minds, you really see that, hey, anything can happen, and at any given time, it could be your year or it could be totally not your year. So take that with a grain of salt. Make sure that you know that anyone can perform well, and it all rides on just a little bit of luck, because I consider myself to be very knowledgeable about baseball and fantasy baseball, and I am probably one of the bottom 20 teams in TGFBI right now, and that's no fault to my own. I'm trying every week. I'm putting in bids for Fab. I'm trying to make my team better, but I had a bunch of injuries. My first overall pick got hurt. It changes your whole draft strategy when you're relying on one guy, and if they get hurt, the season's over. So it's not great. You can rebound, you can adjust, you can make all the moves you want, but sometimes it's just not your year. So hopefully you all can understand that, hey, sometimes it's just not your time, and you just got to shake it off and go after it the next season. But before we get into the rest of the episode, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter, at This Week PL, and you could send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. So make sure that you follow us, and please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Now, let's get into the news from this past week. We'll start with something that we kind of expected would happen at some point, and we've been delaying the inevitable, but hopefully he comes back soon. We start with Tyler Glasnow of the Dodgers, who was placed on the 15-day IL on Tuesday, retroactive to July 6th, due to lower back tightness. Now, backs are a little tricky. Hopefully, after the All-Star break, he'll be able to return, because he has been one of the best pitchers in baseball, especially for fantasy with all those strikeouts. So hopefully he comes back soon. My fingers are crossed for him. It stinks because, John, you and I both knew that at some point he's probably going to get injured. It's just the track record speaks for itself. He hasn't pitched more than 100 innings twice in his career. Like, it's just something that happens, and it's unfortunate. But if this is the worst thing that happens to him all season and he comes back and he's okay, then this is just a minor scratch on what will be a fantastic season.
Yeah, I mean, part of it, too, is just the timing, right? All-Star break is coming up. It just feels like the Dodgers are just taking an opportunity to, you know, skip a turn and
and
be able to call someone up. So, of course, that also just comes in line with the other pitcher that they sent down to AAA.
Yep.
Which you'll mention.
Yeah, so as John mentioned, someone was optioned down to AAA for the Dodgers, and that person was Bobby Miller. He was optioned to AAA on Wednesday after a horrible start against the Phillies. Miller hasn't been great since he returned from the IL, and this demotion is likely for him to iron out the kinks before returning to the Dodgers rotation. Hopefully that's just it, because I'm someone who drafted Bobby Miller quite high in a few leagues, one being TGFBI, and look what that's done to me. So I was very, very high on Bobby Miller going into this season, and it's really unfortunate that he started off okay, then got hurt, then he came back and stunk, and now he's in the minors. So you just can never tell with some of these guys. And what's crazy, John, is have you seen the Dodgers starting pitchers on the IL? It'll probably be the best staff in baseball if they were all healthy.
Yeah, I mean, with Glasnow on that list, yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it depends if you count Shohei, because obviously, like, he's technically healthy. He's just not healthy to pitch.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's like Shohei, Glasnow, Dustin May's on that, right?
Yep.
Clayton
Walker
Kershaw's
Bueller,
on that.
Clayton
Walker
Kershaw.
Bueller. Yeah.
Tony Gonsolin.
Yeah, just a good, like a group of guys that you could put up against any other like teams, like top five, and they do
yeah,
well.
That IL rotation is better than most in baseball right now. Even injured, I would take them over like the White Sox rotation.
So, oh, that's not hard. Yeah.
No, yeah, it's really, really bad. So hopefully the Dodgers can get healthy because they've been slipping a little bit. So hopefully Bobby Miller can right the ship. Hopefully Glasnow can get better soon, and maybe they can fix some things going on in the future. Next, we have Brian Wu of the Mariners, who will be activated from the 15-day IL and start against the Angels on Friday. He's coming back from a right hamstring strain. O'Neill Cruz of the Pirates has missed two straight games due to hamstring tightness. He returned to the lineup on Thursday. Bryce Harper of the Phillies was held out of the lineup on Wednesday due to a bruised right hand that he suffered while making a play in the field in his first game back from the IL. He also returned to the lineup on Thursday. Zach Wheeler of the Phillies was removed from his last start due to a back injury. The MRI came back negative and is iffy for his next start on Sunday. The Phillies are going to be extra cautious with their ace, so I would assume that he's not going to pitch this Sunday, and he's just going to take a break going into the All-Star break and then come back good as new. So fingers crossed, because I know that a lot of teams are relying on Zach Wheeler, so hopefully he is okay. Yordan Alvarez of the Astros exited Wednesday's game against the Marlins with right hip tightness. There's currently no word yet on the severity of his injury. Cody Bellinger of the Cubs left Wednesday's game after being hit by a pitch on his left middle finger. He'll head for x-rays and more information should follow soon. Reed Garrett of the Mets was placed on the 15-day IL on Wednesday with right elbow inflammation. Jeffrey Springs of the Rays is projected to return to the Rays rotation in late July. He's been recovering from Tommy John surgery and has already had a few rehab starts. And last but not least, Matt McClain of the Reds is aiming for an August 12th rehab assignment. He's coming back from left shoulder surgery. John, we had a pretty short list here, so that's good news. Fingers crossed that it stays like this the rest of the season, but any comments on this list?
Jokingly, I wish we had some Mike Trout news.
Yeah, no, without a doubt.
Yeah, but yeah, it's the Cody Bellinger injury is definitely one of those really unfortunate ones, because he was a kind of a trade candidate, with his contract kind of being up at the end of the season, and well, not truly being up at the season. He has player options, and you know, initially the assumption was, hey, if he's healthy, he's just going to decline the player options and try to find another big contract. But now that he has this injury, the Cubs definitely are not going to be able to trade him, and then we'll see if Cody is any better this season, because he has not been very good. But it's kind of unfortunate that, yeah, he kind of ran into this issue.
Yeah, Cody's been struggling a little bit this season, and he was kind of turning it around as of late, and then, of course, gets hit by a pitch on the middle finger, of course. So, yeah, not great. Hopefully he can recover soon, and it's not a serious injury because, like you said, trade candidate. It could be pretty exciting if a team acquired Cody Bellinger at the deadline if the Cubs were out of it. The Cubs are still in the mix, so who knows what they'll do. But, yeah, Bellinger is definitely someone that will hopefully get better soon, because a lot of things could be going good for Bellinger, and a lot of people are probably relying on him in fantasy to put up some stats. So hopefully, Bellinger, you feel better soon. Now, moving on to the player performances from this past week, we are going to get into the weekend, which is Friday to Sunday, July 5th to July 7th. John, who did well this weekend?
Yeah, we've got a lot of names to shout out over the weekend, because there was just a lot of great performances. But we're going to start out with Brian Reynolds of the Pittsburgh Pirates. On Friday, he went 4-for-5 with 2 homers, 3 runs, and 6 RBI. Reynolds was actually named to his second All-Star team of his career on Sunday. But before that announcement came out, Reynolds pretty much bolstered his candidacy with a 2-homer game, with one of those actually being a grand slam to right center. In terms of year-to-date numbers, this actually surprised me, but Reynolds ranks as the 10th best outfielder in a 5x5 roto format. Among all batters, he's currently ranked 28th, so really good numbers there. I feel like we've been waiting for Reynolds to put it all together, and it looks like he finally might be turning the corner here. Through 400-ish at-bats, Reynolds has 17 homers with 42 runs and 56 RBI. He's slashing .280, .344, .486. Put all those numbers together, and he might be able to get to 30 homers with 90 runs and 90 RBIs, and possibly double-digit steals. He's always been good at like a few categories, but he has never been like elite at all of them. And it feels like this might be an opportunity for him to do that. Also want to mention, of course, I mean, this was one of the big memes of baseball during that weekend. But yeah, it was a day for the homers as the Pirates actually shot off all their fireworks in a game against the Mets. So sorry, Lou, that you had to experience that. But I believe they won 14-2, and frustrating enough, O'Neill Cruz did not get a single homer or an RBI in that entire game, which kind of annoyed me. Whatever. Will Smith also had to remind folks that he's pretty good at baseball with a three-homer game. It seems like he's actually kind of cemented himself as... I hesitate to say he's the best fantasy catcher right now, but for a guy who was kind of almost out of the conversation of top three with all these kind of younger catchers in the game, Will Smith was like, no, I'm still good. You know, he signed his big extension with the Dodgers. And yeah, he's been playing really elite this season. Saturday, Shohei Ohtani went 2-for-2 with a triple, a homer, 2 runs, an RBI, 2 walks, and a stolen base. It feels like to me that Shohei has had himself a very quiet, elite season. At this point, we kind of just expect greatness from him, and getting a combo meal from him seems almost pedestrian. It feels like every week we're like, well, we could talk about Shohei, but I mean, everyone already expects him to be this good, so we'll talk about someone else. I have to highlight him, though, because we're just a little bit past the halfway point of the season, and Ohtani has nearly 30 homers and has over 20 steals. He actually might have a legit shot at like a 50-30 season. I hesitate to say 50-40 because I'm sure the Dodgers don't want him running that much anyways. But yeah, he's been incredible in both speed and in power and pretty much every offensive category. He's second behind Aaron Judge in OPS. He's top 10 in nearly every relevant fantasy category. And also next year, as we mentioned, he also might return as a top 10 pitcher. So it'll be interesting to see how he adjusts next season. Can't believe what we were talking about next season. But, you know, as a guy who's now going to pitch potentially every 5 or 6 days, you know, how does that affect his batting? Is he still going to be as elite of a batter? And, of course, it feels kind of silly to question that because I feel like the answer is yes. I also need to shout out Jose Miranda of the Twins, who we talked about on the pod last week, as on Saturday he tied the record for the most consecutive at-bats with a hit with 12 straight at-bats. So shout out to him for being the first guy to do it since 1953. And then finally on Sunday, Jared Kelenic of Atlanta, 1-for-3 with a homer, run, 3 RBI, a walk, and a stolen base. I feel like we need to talk about Kelenic and how he's completely turned around the narrative on his career. While I was kind of doing some research, I kind of forgot he was originally on the Mets, and then got traded to Seattle, and you know, had some okay years there. There was some, you know, controversy of like Seattle leaving him down at AAA to kind of preserve his you know, service time, yada yada yada. Eventually he goes to Atlanta this season, and now that he's been pushing the leadoff spot with Acuna's injury, through 23 games he has 6 homers, 13 runs, 14 RBIs, 4 stolen bases, and he's slashing .298, .337, and .532. It's also funny when you look at his overall season metrics because they aren't really that good, but since he's been in the leadoff spot, he's been on an absolute tear. And of course, Kelenic's big dig was the fact that he just kept striking out, and his strikeout rate actually has not gone down this season. It has gone down a tiny bit, but not like in a, you know, a big way where you're like, oh, he's actually making progress. It's like, you know, 1 or 2% here and there. But that being said, he is making more contact, and for a batter who's always had pretty good Statcast metrics in terms of barrel rate, in terms of max EV, turns out making more contact is resulting in a lot of better stats for Jared Kelenic.
Yeah, there was a lot of offense over this weekend. So as you mentioned, Brian Reynolds, he's having a really good season, and it's always amazing because the Pirates offense as a whole is not great. Obviously, they have Brian Reynolds, O'Neill Cruz, maybe some days where they have McCutcheon and Jack Sawinski helping out. But besides that, they really don't have much going on for them. And Brian Reynolds just consistently puts up good numbers, which is kind of shocking, but not really, because Brian Reynolds is a great player. And I'm kind of haunted by Brian Reynolds because in a best ball league, I think I was between Brian Reynolds and Alex Bregman.
Mm.
And I went with Bregman because I believe it's a OBP league. So that's Bregman's preferred play style. And I remember thinking like Brian Reynolds is good, but he's not anything fantastic. I don't know. Like I wasn't too sold on him, and I was like, I'd rather have Bregman for the upside of like 25 plus homers and a 350 plus OBP on a good offense. And it's kind of biting me in the butt. I think Brian Reynolds is having a fantastic year, better than Bregman, to say the least. And yeah, I don't know. I think that kind of haunts me right now. So Brian Reynolds, congratulations on having a great year so far. Hopefully it continues. It obviously stunk that it was against my Mets and the Mets got torched by them. But hey, sometimes that happens. Shohei Ohtani has been just unbelievable, as you mentioned. I mean, just let me read this off real quick. So he's got 72 runs scored, 28 home runs, 66 RBI, 22 stolen bases, and a 402 OBP. This guy is unbelievable, and it's not even the All-Star break. We're obviously approaching it, but the fact that he's almost 30-22 before the All-Star break, that's disgusting. That is actually disgusting. So to have a combined 50 home runs plus stolen bases, it's just nuts. So Shohei Ohtani is unbelievable, and the fact that he can pitch and be a top 10 pitcher for fantasy as well is just mind-blowing. I just can't wrap my head around it. Then Jared Kelenic, I always say this, and it's probably annoying, but it's so frustrating that the Braves just get a player that's washed up or bad or perceived bad or done, and they just turn him into his full potential. We saw it with Chris Sale, and now we see it with Jared Kelenic and ex-Met, and of course it's in the division. It's just such a pain. I just can't take the Braves. They're too good of an organization. Even right now, when their whole team is hurt and slumping and playing bad, they're still better than the Mets. And I don't understand. I mean, the Mets have obviously picked things up and are one of the best teams in baseball right now in the past, like, month. Mm-hmm. But still, just I just can't take it, man. Especially with Kelenic, because I was upset we traded him in the first place. And I love Edwin Diaz and Robinson Cano, whatever. That trade kind of stunk at first because I really liked Kelenic as a prospect. Then I said, okay, I'm at peace with it. And then obviously Kelenic didn't do too hot in Seattle and took a while to come around. And I was like, hey, we won this trade. Like, it's fine. I still think we won the trade because Edwin Diaz has been our lockdown closer for 3-4 years now. And I think he's fantastic. So I'm not mad about it. But obviously Kelenic is coming around to what I thought he could become. Mm-hmm. And it just stinks that it's for the Braves.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, like, if you look at his season-long metrics, it's not great, but if you just look at his last month, he's been absolutely elite. So we'll see how much of this is a flash in the pan and how much of this is just like, no, he's actually like figured it out. So
yeah,
interesting things to follow for sure. All right, moving on to pitching for the weekend, we're going to start with Justin Steele of the Cubs on Friday. 9 innings, 1 earned run, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. A year after being a legitimate Cy Young candidate, which I think shocked pretty much everyone, Steele has followed up that campaign with actually another solid season. The ERA and the WHIP are actually better this season compared to last year, although he did miss a month after getting hurt on opening day. So maybe there's a little caveat with, you know, having 5 to 6 less starts than the guys he's being compared to. That being said, across his last 8 starts, so kind of the last month and a half, he's been on a tear: 1.67 ERA, 0.91 WHIP, 25% strikeout rate, and a sub-6% walk rate. And even though he only has 1 win on the season, thanks Cubs, out of those 8 starts, he's had 6 quality starts. So if you're in a quality start league, Justin Steele's been pretty awesome. He's peaking at the right time, and hopefully this continues for the remainder of the season. It has worked out so far, because after this start on Friday, he faced the Orioles today on Thursday and absolutely shut them down. 7 shutout innings, only had 4 strikeouts, but he only gave up 3 hits and had no walks. So, yeah, he's been really elite, picking it up right at the halfway point of the year, and hopefully, yeah, it kind of continues for the remainder of the season. Moving on to another player in the NL Central, Hunter Greene of Cincinnati went up against Detroit, got the no decision here, 7 innings with 0 earned runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. Greene has had a pretty rocky June with only 1 quality start through 6 starts. On the season, his stats aren't that bad. He's got a 3.45 ERA, a 1.14 WHIP. Greene's benefit comes in a great strikeout rate, as even with a 4% drop in his strikeout rate from last year, he still ranks 29th among all qualified starters, which probably tells you how good his strikeout prowess was in this last 2 years. It was around 30%, I think. He's still, unfortunately, though, not really consistent enough to be considered ace level, but he is on pace to set career best in terms of innings, wins, ERA, and WHIP. The only problem is those numbers still just aren't very good, but he is still relatively young. There's still time for him to grow and kind of develop into a more consistent pitcher. And then finally, on Sunday, Luis Gil of the Yankees went up against Boston, got the loss in this one, but he did go 6.2 innings with one run, four hits, no walks, and nine strikeouts. Gil was the hottest pitcher for over a month. I mean, we talked about him. He had a seven-game stretch where he managed a win in each of those starts. However, sometime after mid-June, the switch flipped and Gil was rocked for three straight starts, and it was pretty awful. That being said, Sunday's start was a breath of fresh air for Gil managers, nine strikeouts and nearly seven innings, many thanks to increased usage of his slider, which generated six whiffs and six called strikes. Weirdly, he kind of employed the slider all over the strike zone instead of focusing it down and club side, which, you know, is kind of where you expect a slider to go. But it worked out for him. The fastball was also great, 15 combined called strikes and whips. He does get the Orioles this coming Saturday, so they'll probably be a good test to see is he actually back. But considering he got for seven runs last time out against Baltimore, I don't know. Pick your poison here. It might work out, it might not, but it ultimately will be a good test to see, is he legit?
So Justin Steele has really come back strong since returning from the IL, and he's looking like the pitcher he was last year. So that's good news for anyone who rosters Steele and drafted him and was hoping for this kind of production, because he's really been pretty good. I mean, like you said, the quality starts he's giving you is fantastic, and he's had a 1.67 ERA and a 91 whip. So you can't be mad about that over the last eight starts. So he's been fantastic and an absolute unit. So hopefully this rides out even after the All-Star break. I believe it will. We all believed in him coming into this year after last season, and it was a shock that he came onto the scene so strong, but it looks like he's here to stay. So Justin Steele looks like the real deal. And then Hunter Green, he's actually an All-Star. I can't believe he's an All-Star. I mean, the numbers are fine. The numbers are good. I mean, he's been a good fantasy pitcher, but I feel like all the pitchers have the same ERA and whip this season. I don't know about you. Like, Mackenzie Gore has a very similar ERA and whip to Hunter Green. I don't think he's an All-Star, so I don't know. It's like a coin flip for who's an All-Star nowadays, especially because Lindor and Nimmo got snubbed, and I'll get into that a little bit later on. But it just, I don't get any of this All-Star stuff. But anyways, Hunter Green has had a pretty good season, a lot better than last year, and the sky is the limit for him. As you said, the strikeout percentage is what we really care about from him, and if that strikeout rate continues to be great, Hunter Green can be an ace for fantasy, but you hope to see a little bit lower of an ERA in that regard. He still has a little bit of trouble with walks, and you want the whip to be a little lower, so hopefully Hunter Green can come around with that and keep delivering good, consistent outings like this one. And then Luis Gil, yeah, this is a real prove-it test against Baltimore coming up, because, like you said, he had three straight starts that were just clunkers, and we thought he was like AL Rookie of the Year, right? Like, yeah, we thought he was going to be amazing, and then he kind of flamed out. So it's sometimes a little precautionary to give out flowers too soon. I know a lot of people wanted to do victory laps and be so excited, but he is an exciting pitcher, but he obviously has his own flaws. But now we are going to take a quick break before we get into Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday's performances from this past week. So stay tuned, and we'll be back after this. All right, we are back, and it's time to get into Monday's performances from July 8th. Thanks to Christian Ottoman for the Hindsight Bias Hitter Recap article. And we're going to start with Brandon Nimmo of the Mets, who went 2-for-4 with a home run, a run, and two RBI. Nimmo has been having an unbelievable season this year, and as a Mets fan, I've had the honor of watching him play every single day. In just 86 games, Nimmo has 16 home runs, 8 stolen bases, 58 runs, and 59 RBI. His career high in home runs is 24, which he accomplished last season in 152 games, and he's on pace to shatter that, as well as a career high in RBI and stolen bases. His previous high in stolen bases was 9, and he's already at 8, and RBI was 68, and he's at 62 already before the All-Star break, so he is really accomplishing stuff that we didn't believe Nimmo could. Also, Nimmo homered here on Monday, then again on Tuesday, and again on Wednesday, and then he added on 3 more RBI in Thursday's game to allow the Mets to win. Just an unbelievable season for Nimmo. He's been a true fantasy asset this season that was probably an afterthought in most drafts. I know he probably went later than the 15th round in most scenarios. So Nimmo is easily one of the best values that people got during draft day. And it's super unfortunate, like I said, that he's an afterthought as well for the All-Star game, because he definitely deserves it. If there's any justice, anyone listening out there, put his name in for like a write-in vote. I don't even know if you could do that anymore, but just get him out there, because Nimmo and Lindor both deserve to be All-Stars. If you look at Lindor's stats, sorry, little rant here. The starting shortstop for the NL All-Star team is Trey Turner. And I love Trey Turner. I think he's fantastic. I love what he did on Team USA. I don't like that he's a Philly, of course, but I like Trey Turner, the player, especially for fantasy and just in general. But if you look at his stats, he was hurt for a month. And yes, Lindor stunk for the first month, of course. But throw those 2 months out and look at the stats right now between Trey Turner and Francisco Lindor. Lindor has pretty much doubled all of Trey Turner's stats this year. And he's not even on the All-Star team. And Trey Turner is the starting shortstop. I know it's voted on. I know it's a fan vote. But that's just ridiculous. We have to do better as baseball fans, because Lindor absolutely snubbed, as well as Nimmo. So, sorry, I just had to rant a little bit there, because that makes zero sense to me that both of these guys aren't All-Stars, because they both deserve it. But moving back on to hitters for Monday, O'Neal Cruz of the Pirates, he went 2-for-3 with a home run, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Although he didn't homer in that onslaught on Friday, he did homer here on Monday. Cruz has also started to heat up as of late. In the last 14 days, Cruz has hit 313, crushed 3 home runs, stole 1 base, scored 5 runs, and knocked in 7 RBI. He's also doing a little bit better against lefties, starting with going from sitting every game against them to batting lower in the order when there's a southpaw on the bump. So that's good news, because whenever you saw him against a lefty, he would most likely be sitting, so you just have to bench him. But now they're kind of getting him in there when there's a lefty on the mound, even though he's batting like 7th or 8th during that time. I'll take it, as long as he's getting at-bats and can prove that he can hit them, because there's nothing worse than not getting consistent playing time. If you're on the bench, you're not going to perform as well, and if you just keep getting reps, you're going to get better. So hopefully they allow Cruz to keep doing that, and hopefully Cruz can keep this good stretch going, and we can see a second half explosion from someone who has a ceiling that's higher than most.
I have communicated plenty of times on this podcast on how I've been waiting for the O'Neal Cruz breakout. And it's like, it feels like he every week is like kind of solid, right? Like he might hit a homer, has a couple RBI, stuff like that. But yeah, these past 2 weeks have been very nice. A little bit more peak Cruz. It is just kind of unfortunate that the rest of his team around him, as we mentioned with Brian Reynolds, just isn't very good. So it's a little tough to have, you know, a higher number of RBI. It's tougher to get runs because no one's batting you in. But he's been doing the best of it. I mean, when you hit homers, you get a run and an RBI with that. So I feel like it's pretty solid for what we can ask for. And then, yeah, Nimmo's been really incredible. I was just taking a look at, how players look in the year-to-date numbers for outfielders. And Nimmo's currently ranked 7th, which is, not bad for a guy who's ADP was 198, so you know that's around 15 ish, right? Middle of the draft.
Yep.
And you get a top 7 outfielder by doing that. That's not bad. Of course, he's kind of blown out by the water by Jurickson Profar, who's having a career year, but no one would have expected anything from that from him. But Nimmo's been really solid, and glad that he's a bright spot for your Mets.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And it's crazy, too, just one last comment on that whole thing. And with war, if you just go off of war for the, I believe, entire NL, here's the top 10. Shohei Ohtani, Ellie De La Cruz, Bryce Harper, Ketel Marte, Francisco Lindor, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, Jurickson Profar, and Christian Yelich. 1 through 10 are all All-Stars, except for number 5, which is Francisco Lindor. That just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't get how that's allowed or how it can happen. It just shouldn't happen, because the top 10 in war in the NL, all of them are All-Stars except for one, and it's the 5th ranked guy, not number 10, number 5. So yeah. Something's wrong there. I mean, that's just bad. And I'm not just trying to be a biased Mets fan. Even if I was not a Mets fan, I would be saying that these two guys should be All-Stars because they truly deserve it. So unfortunate. But moving on to pitchers from Monday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Dance Gavin Dance SP Roundup article, we'll start with Andrew Abbott of the Reds, who went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts against the Rockies. There's a gallows pole for Abbott with 19 whiffs against Rocky Road. His four-seamer was executed upstairs and arm side, and his sweeper was down and in. Abbott has had sparkling numbers this year, a 3.06 ERA, 1.17 whip, 9 wins, and 82 strikeouts in 103 innings pitched. However, he went on a stretch like this last season as well, and then it balanced out with a downright terrible end to the season in August and September. He had an over 6 ERA in both of those months last season, so anything can happen with Andrew Abbott. And this could all be smoke and mirrors, but you keep riding him out while he's hot, and he gets the Marlins next, so of course you're going to start him there. So if you do roster him, throw him out there for that. And the second the wheels start to fall off, don't be ashamed to cut bait, because he is a glorified streamer or back-end starter for fantasy. He's not going to blow you out of the water, and if he's hot, he can be great, and that's why you're using him now. But if he does falter, don't feel bad about cutting him, as someone else is better out there. And then we have Mitchell Parker of the Nationals, who went 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts against the Cardinals. Parker is a bit unconventional, but he's been making it work, and making it work well. The numbers for this season are actually quite similar to Abbott, with a 3.44 ERA and a 1.09 whip, but he does it a little differently with 3 very good secondary pitches. His ceiling isn't very high, but he's definitely a reliable starter in 12-team leagues and deeper, as well as a top-of-the-line streamer on any given day. So Mitchell Parker's been a nice, I guess, diamond in the rough from the waiver wire, where you picked him up, didn't really expect much, and he's been pretty great all season. So shout out to you, Mitchell Parker.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when Mitchell Parker was kind of a risky streamer pick, and he's really kind of turned it around. His fastball is, kind of solid, and he has enough to support that fastball where he's been able to survive this season. And he's one of those guys where he's probably just out of, he's like a better streamer, right? I mean, like, I think, like, you know, we just call pitchers Tobies here at Pitcherless and things like that. I feel like he's kind of like that guy where he's really solid. He might be available on the wire in some leagues, but most leagues, like, he's kind of picked up as like the starting pitcher 7, starting pitcher 6 sort of number. Good for him. Keep him on your team until he kind of blows up. And then Andrew Abbott, I think for him, what's been really cool, yes, this was against the Rockies, but he also had like a really solid start against the Yankees right before this. So he's been really hot. Doesn't matter who he's facing, he's been really solid, and like what you said, could be smoking weirs, but also I really like the fact that the next starts against the Marlins. That being said, I am facing him in fantasy, so I hope he does poorly.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. I don't blame you one bit.
Yeah, I think just saying that just jinxed me, and he's going to be amazing, but, you know, it's okay. All right, moving on to Tuesday. Thanks to Mark Stubiger for Under My Urshela, hit a recap article. We are going to start with Logan Ohabi of the Los Angeles Angels, 3-for-4 with 2 homers, 2 runs, 2 RBI on Tuesday. Ohabi has made his way into the top 5 catcher conversation. In terms of year-to-date numbers, Ohabi ranks as the 5th best catcher in a 5x5 roto format, which is pretty impressive considering he was the 11th catcher off the board in most drafts. Ohabi is 3rd among catchers in average. He's 2nd in OPS, and he's been a bright spot for this team, even with the fact that the Angels have just been absolutely awful. Ohabi has kind of proved that, he is kind of the catcher of the future for this team, and he might even be a mainstay in fantasy circles for years to come. And then moving on to Jazz Chisholm Jr. of the Miami Marlins, 2-for-4 with a homer, 2 runs, an RBI, and a stolen base. I've always been a big Jazz fan, although it's been kind of tough to root for him as he's just always been hurt. He has managed to stay healthy so far this season, knock on wood, and looks capable of finishing with a 2020 season, which is a feat he's always come close to, but can't because he's always just spent a good amount of time on the injured list. This was his first homer in nearly a month, though, so, not great. It shows in his slugging percentage. It's just .417, which is a far cry from his career best of .535. Granted, he did set that mark in 60 games. So the fact that we got 28 more games from Jazz in this season, I'll take that rather than just him surviving for one-third of a season.
Yeah, Jazz's upside has never been in question. It's just about how long he can stay on the field. And that's the big issue, because we know that he can go 30-30. We know that he can accomplish feats like that. Obviously, the Marlins team around him isn't that great, so maybe runs and RBI aren't really going to happen. But in terms of homers and stolen bases, Jazz can do it just like anybody else can. So hopefully he could stay healthy and just keep contributing, because he definitely could get that 2020 season this year if he just stays on the field. And then Logan Ohapi's been fantastic as a catcher in most leagues. I mean, even in those one catcher leagues, Logan Ohapi's probably a top eight catcher right now. So
yeah,
he's really proved that he can do it with the bat and with the glove for the Angels. So it's nice to see that Logan Ohapi is succeeding, because I remember just 2 years ago, everyone was kind of touting Logan Ohapi as like a next big fantasy catcher, and it's really coming true. So it's cool to see Logan Ohapi doing well.
Yeah. Moving on to pitchers then, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Miller Blight SP Roundup article. We are going to start with the Met, Jose Quintana, going up against Washington, 7 innings with no earned runs, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. Of course, this is a victory lap because I selected him as a streamer last week. That being said, I did not take my own advice, and I made a mistake by not picking him up. I instead picked up Brian Bayo, and that just that didn't work. Thought that Bayo had a better chance at a quality start, but of course Quintana ended up going 7, so shows how much I know about fantasy baseball. He does get Rocky Road next, and you bet I am not going to miss out on that opportunity. I think the cool part about this was the fact that he got 5 strikeouts, because last time against the Nats, I think he only finished with 1 strikeout, so that's why I was a little bit more wary of picking him up. But he has enough strikeouts to kind of provide enough for your team that he doesn't absolutely crater your strikeout numbers. So good job for Quintana. He's got a very nice schedule coming up, so definitely pick him up if you have the opportunity. And then Yusei Kikuchi of the Blue Jays going up against the Giants in a no decision. 7.1 innings, 2 earned runs, 6 hits, no walks, but most importantly, 13 strikeouts. You heard that right, 13. I was expecting a pretty good day from Kikuchi because the Giants aren't really that dangerous this season, but 13 strikeouts is definitely not what it was, what I was expecting. What was the difference here for Kikuchi? An elite fastball was the main difference. He leaned on the four-seamers to a tune of a 44% CSW, which is a very good number. He had 25 combined whiffs and called strikes on that pitch alone, which is more than what some pitchers generate on a single night on all their pitchers. His curveball and their slider did their job well, and he also decided to not really go with his changeup. He only threw that 9 times. And if you've been following Kikuchi's write-ups on Nick's articles, you know that he is just not a fan of that changeup. And so sounds like Kikuchi listened and went more curveball slider heavy in this one. And it worked out for 13 strikeouts.
So with Jose Quintana, first of all, I'm upset with you because you picked up Brian Bayo, and I've already told you that
quit this guy.
I don't care if Jose Quintana gave up 9 earned runs. Brian Bayo was the worst pick.
Yeah. He had a good matchup, but no, he was up against Oakland, and it was just like, hey, maybe he's got it back, his changeup's back, but no, he is banned from my team at this point.
Yeah, no, that's a trap. I remember I had him on my team for one more week pretty much, and I was like, oh, he gets Oakland, I'll give him that.
Yeah,
let's see what he does. Then he stunk, and I was like, I should have just dropped him. Why did I care about the Oakland matchup? Yeah,
yeah,
not a fan of Brian Bayo. But Jose Quintana, a little bit of information which I wish you would have asked me between those two, because as a Mets fan, I have a little bit of insight.
Yes.
And I would have told you to go Quintana, not just because you recommended him as a streamer on the podcast, but because Jose Quintana's ERA when pitching to Francisco Alvarez this season is 2.08.
Ah.
With every other catcher that's not Francisco Alvarez, his ERA is 5.68.
Huh. That's
so
interesting.
If Alvarez is behind the plate, Jose Quintana is like Jacob deGrom. So just keep that in your mind. If you see Quintana as a streamer, for anybody listening, make sure you pick him up if Alvarez is the catcher. If Luis Torrens is catching, or if anybody else is catching, steer clear, because he's not doing well. But with Francisco Alvarez behind the plate, Quintana's been incredible. I mean, the last 5 starts with Alvarez behind the plate, he has a 0.89 ERA. But in the 7 starts total for the year, he has a 2.08 ERA. It's just really impressive. So yeah, Jose Quintana, awesome performance here. And then Kikuchi, 13 strikeouts is just unbelievable, especially against the Giants. I don't see them as a team that strikes out way too much. And to get 13 strikeouts against them is pretty insane. So amazing night out for Kikuchi. But with that being said, we are going to take our final break, and when we come back, we will recap the performances from Wednesday and Thursday, as well as recommend some streamers for next week for all of you. You don't want to miss it, so stay tuned. We are back, and it's time to talk about Wednesday's performances from July 10th. Thanks to Jonathan Metzeler for the Brooks Baseball Hitter Recap article. We're going to start with Rhys Hines of the Reds, who went 1-for-4 with an RBI and a stolen base. Since Hines has been called up, he has gone 8-for-16 with 2 home runs, 4 RBI, 2 runs, and 2 stolen bases. Now, you're all probably asking, who is Rhys Hines? Well, that's a valid question because he isn't a name you should know. Hines was the second round pick for the Reds in 2019, and in the minors has had a 38% strikeout rate. That is not good at all and doesn't really show you any promise. However, he has a power-speed combo that can certainly play if everything clicks. And right now, it's clicking. Now, will it click and hold forever? Most likely not. But he is blistering hot out of the gate, and he's someone that you'll want to pick up and ride out until the flame goes out. So if Rhys Hines is out there, which he probably is, he's only 33% rostered on Yahoo, he's got outfield eligibility, you might as well grab him, see what you got there. You never know. But my guess is he's going to start striking out a lot and then probably be back in the minors pretty soon. But if not, that power and speed combo can really give you some fantasy production. And then we have Alec Burleson of the Cardinals, who went 1-for-4 with a home run, a run, and 2 RBI. Burleson has been a revelation this year for fantasy. Now fully entrenched in the 2-hole for the Cardinals, Burleson has some pretty awesome numbers. 15 home runs, 48 RBI, 38 runs, and to top it all off, despite being big and slow, he has 7 stolen bases. With first base and outfield eligibility, he's someone that can easily put up a 25-plus home run and 100-plus RBI type of season, and he's well on his way to doing that. If you picked him up, hold on to him, and if he is somehow still out there in your league, go ahead and scoop him up quick because he's been really, really good.
Yeah, Burleson is interesting because I had the decision of whether to pick him up or pick up Byron Buxton. And being the homer that I am, I picked up Byron Buxton, who also has been granted very hot this past couple of weeks. So I don't feel terrible about that decision. But Burleson, yeah, is one of those guys who is on the waiver in my league. It's an 11-teamer, so that's probably why he's still available. Only 3 outfielders, so you know, very few outfielders are picked up. Burleson might be kind of in that top 30 conversation, but it feels like he's kind of just on the fringe there. But that being said, in a 12-teamer, where you have, let's say, 3 outfielders and 2 util spots. Yeah, I think he's definitely a guy that you should be having on your team. And then, yeah, Rhys Hines, honestly, if we could just get more offense for this Cincy team, that would be really nice. It feels like all the highlights from them are kind of just like Ellie De La Cruz highlights. That's pretty much it. Like, the rest of the team just is not contributing, despite the fact that, like, we were very high on them coming into the season. And, yeah, it just has not panned out for them. So, you know, if they can get a guy with a good power speed combo, good for them. He's gonna hit really well at Great American Ballpark.
Yeah, and to be fair to your point, if I had to choose between Buxton and Burleson, I'd probably go Buxton as well, just because of the ridiculous upside that we know he's capable of.
Yeah,
and probably because if he does get hurt, which most likely will happen, then you could just filter him out for someone else or put him on your IL. So, I don't know. I like that kind of flexibility. Burleson's been great, though. And if you have a chance to pick him up, yeah, definitely go and grab him.
Yeah. I mean, one little Buxton tidbit. He's currently second among all center fielders. Or he might be third at this point. I'm not sure. But, you know, top 3 among all center fielders in OPS right now. So
wow.
That's right behind a guy called Aaron Judge. So he's not getting first anytime soon. But, yeah, Buxton's been really, really solid. And, hopefully he stays healthy. Fingers crossed. So,
yeah, I have Buxton in a lot of leagues, so fingers crossed here as well. Moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the free Land Rover SP Roundup article. We'll start with Tobias Myers of the Brewers, who went 8 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts against the Pirates. Myers is on quite the hot streak here. He has earned 5 quality starts in his last 7 outings, and this performance against the Pirates is his best outing of the year, practically tying his outing against the Tigers. Myers has a really good slider, and if he's commanding it, good things can happen, hence what we saw here. He earned 12 whiffs and had a 32% CSW, and even though the Pirates aren't the greatest offense, there might be something to Myers. He's worth a speculative ad, or at the very least, he's earned your trust as a streamer, and friend of the podcast Nate Schwartz actually just wrote an article about Tobias Myers for Pitcher List, and that came out like genuinely 12 hours ago from when we're recording this podcast, so make sure you go and read that because that'll give you a little bit more information about who Tobias Myers is and his arsenal, and it's a great read. So shout out to Nate Schwartz. Thank you for that article, and make sure you read about it and then probably pick up Tobias Myers because he's got a lot of good things to say. And then we have Shota Imanaga of the Cubs, who went 6 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts against the Orioles. Phew, it's nice to see Imanaga return to form in this one. A strikeout per inning, only 1 walk, no homers allowed, no runs allowed. It's nice to see, especially against an offense like Baltimore. There's really not much more to add about Imanaga. We know who he is and what he can do. The one issue he has is the long ball, and we knew that coming in, and that can certainly catch up to him. However, I fully believe that he's an ace, and I'm going to trust throwing him out there against any opponent for the rest of the year. He certainly earned that, so Shota, it's good to have you back. Hopefully you can keep this going for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I picked up Tobias Myers in Guillotine League, so I'm also hoping that he does pretty well. Big fan of this performance here. So, and he's been kind of a fun story for the Brewers. I remember when he first came up, probably, 2 months ago-ish at this point, from AAA. Really decent numbers. You know, nothing that was, like, amazing, right? And even this line, you know, 8 innings, no one runs is really good, but, you know, still only 6 strikeouts here. But he's just a really... he's another name in a long line of just solid Brewers pitchers. And, I think that is definitely something that you can put some faith in. And, I think he does really well against bad teams, and I think he does solid against okay teams as well. So, definitely a good add there. And then, Shota Imanaga, nice to see some good numbers from him. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, at kind of midway through the first half of the season, he was absolutely elite, right? And I think a lot of people were naming like, oh, you know, he's a good chance to be the NL Rookie of the Year with just his pitching. A little bit of a dip since then, but overall, still really good numbers for a guy who literally is experiencing his first season of Major League Baseball.
Without a doubt.
All right, moving on to Thursday's games. We are going to talk about Imanaga's teammate, actually, Seiya Suzuki. 3-for-5 with a run, 3 RBI today. He finished a homer shy of the cycle. Just kind of a fun thing to say, considering that he did get the triple, which is pretty impressive. But it was, just an overall nice day of offense for the Cubs. They beat the Orioles 8-0. Suzuki still serves as a solid outfielder 2 or 3 in most leagues. Has steady ratios, you know, pretty okay counting stats. Of course, nothing is particularly impressive with Suzuki, but it is good enough to keep on your fantasy teams. It's kind of a similar story as Alec Burleson almost. The numbers maybe aren't as good as Burleson's has been this season, but kind of in the same maybe tier or maybe a tier below that. Suzuki is currently batting .264. He has an OPS of .808, and that's just all fine. It is a far cry, though, from his performance in the MPB, where in his last few seasons, he had an OPS over 1,000, and he had 30 homer power, and that just really has not translated to his time in the majors the last now 3 seasons. Granted, injury has been kind of part of that story, and it just hasn't been maybe as smooth of a transition as all of us were expecting. But, you know, this version of Suzuki is playing right at the level where he was drafted, and that's sometimes more than what you could say about other top 75 batters that were drafted in front of him. Next, Tyler Stevenson of the Cincinnati Reds, 2-for-5 with 2 runs, 5 RBI, and 2 homers. Stevenson made sure that his 2 hits of the games mattered, taking full advantage of Great American Small Park. His first homer actually had an expected batting average on Savant of 170, which is incredible. But when you're in Cincinnati, that just does not matter. It had an exit velocity of 95.8 miles an hour. Traveled 338 feet and would have been a homer in 10 out of 30 stadiums. So shout out to Tyler Stevenson for playing in the right park. That being said, though, Stevenson still has struggled to relevant in the fantasy catcher conversation. It feels like every year he gets a little bit of a hype for the fact that he's a catcher in Cincinnati. But despite that favorable home park, he just really has not had great numbers throughout his past few seasons. This year, however, he is on pace to set career highs in runs, homers, and RBI. He technically is on pace to set a record in steals, but considering his career high is one, it really is not that difficult to beat that. That being said, though, despite, you know, kind of having some of the best numbers of his career, based on his year-to-date numbers, he's still just the 14th best catcher in 5x5 Roto format. So he gets play in two catcher leagues for sure, but in one catcher league, Stevenson's probably just kind of sitting on your waiver wire, and there's no real reason to pick him up.
I really like Seiya Suzuki, and I would love to see him just explode for an incredible season, like a 40-homer, 100 RBI year, because he has that in him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 40 homers is probably a stretch. He's definitely like a 30-homer guy, 35 maybe, but he can really explode on the power front, and I think that he's putting together a great season this year. He's a serviceable outfielder in all leagues, like you said, an outfield two or three. He's been great, so hopefully Seiya Suzuki can finish the year strong, because I like him as a person and a player, so I think that I'm rooting for him, and hopefully we'll be able to draft more of him next season. I'm not exposed to him at all in fantasy this year, which is kind of sad, so it's still cool to see him do well. And then Tyler Stevenson, that's actually hysterical, an expected batting average of 170.
Yeah.
That's insane. What a crazy stat there.
Yeah. Fun thing about Suzuki, or maybe not so fun actually, is that he is kind of having a lower average this season than he has the past two seasons. He's been kind of in the 280s the past two seasons, currently batting 260, but still has, you know, just okay, like great, good numbers, right? I think that's the thing you want from a guy who you're like, you set in your lineup and you don't care, because you know he's going to do really solid week after week. And that's who Suzuki is right now. It would be nice if it was elite, but we'll take really good.
Yeah, his numbers are just okay. 37 runs, 12 homers, 39 RBI, and 9 stolen bases, which is really nice as well.
Yes, for sure.
But the 260 average, like you said, if Seiya Suzuki could be a 275 average, 80 runs, 100 RBI, 25 to 30 home run, 10 stolen base, that's incredible. That's something that you would love to have on your team.
Mm-hmm.
That's hopefully what he can do, and that's what we're rooting for. So hopefully Seiya Suzuki is able to do that. Maybe this season, maybe next season. We'll see, but hopefully Seiya Suzuki can put it all together, because he is a good player.
Yep. All right, moving on to pitchers. Of course, if you were paying any attention to baseball news, you probably already heard this one. Paul Skeens got the win in Milwaukee. 7 innings, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts. Yep, that is 7 no-hit innings from Paul Skeens. It's kind of crazy. I think this is the second time he's done that this season.
Yeah, he had one previous one where I think he had a no-hitter through 6.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, the kid's real. And it's weird to say that the National League Rookie of the Year race is wrapped up after I just talked about Shota Imanaga being kind of in that race. But barring some absolute catastrophe, Skeens, in my opinion, is running away with the award. And it's going to be really tough to unseat him from that that list. He's definitely one of my big misses this year in fantasy. I was kind of too late to pick him up, kind of like by a week. You know, there was like the rumblings like, oh, he's getting, you know, called up to AAA. Getting called up to the big leagues. And I just didn't pick him up when those rumors started in my fantasy leagues. And I paid the price because he's been absolutely dominant. Essentially a top 10 pitcher that you could have picked up off the waiver wire in late April. And he's got a 1.90 ERA. He's got a 0.92 whip. He's got an astounding 12.08 K per nine. And mind you, this guy was just playing in the College World Series last year. He's only 22 years old. And it's impressive because he did this against Milwaukee, who is no slouch when it comes to offensive prowess. And Skeens just absolutely shut down the Brew Crew. His splitter contributed 5 whiffs. The four-seamer earned 10 called strikes. Surprisingly, even though he had 11 strikeouts, his CSW was only 33%, which is like a good number for sure, but not like, you know, elite number like you saw out of Yusei Kikuchi when he had a 44% CSW with 13 strikeouts. That being said, though, the results speak for themselves. 7 no-hit innings. Just absolute incredible performance from Paul Skeens. And yeah, tip of the cap to him. Jack Flaherty of the Tigers also had a good game today. 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Flaherty has been kind of overshadowed by his Cy Young candidate teammate Tarik Skubal, but he does continue to impress with how he's completely turned around his career this season in Detroit. Even without his customary high strikeout numbers in this start, his four-seamer slider combo was still sufficient to shut down a Guardians offense that kind of always manages to have enough offense. But they only managed one run against Flaherty today. On the season, he's top five in strikeout rate. He's top 10 in walk rate, leading to a pretty solid 0.98 whip. And yeah, Flaherty's been doing this kind of resurgence. And I was looking at his numbers. There really isn't kind of a clear thing that explains why he's doing so well. I mean, the big difference between this season compared to seasons past is he's dropped his fastball usage by a little bit, not huge amounts, maybe about 5%, in favor of kind of increasing his curveball usage. But he's still pretty much just a fastball slider guy, and even though that fastball velocity has not really changed, it's still kind of in the 93s. It's been really solid this year, getting a lot of whiffs, getting a lot of O-swings, and yeah, just shout out to Jack Flaherty for absolutely, you know, just kind of, even though there were so many naysayers last year, he has completely turned around his season and has really shown us that there is another level that he can get to.
Yeah, Paul Skeens is just unreal. And he's not really a regret of mine for this fantasy year, because every league that I was in, he was actually drafted. That's kind of strange to me, because I didn't think there was really much of a chance that he could debut this year.
For sure.
I knew there were rumblings, right? Like, you heard that, oh, maybe Paul Skeens at some point. But I was like, no, that's not happening. Like, they're not going to rush him up. What do the Pirates have to play for? So I kind of just doubted it. And man, was I just wrong. And he went really late in the drafts that I was in for the most part. So I really didn't have a chance to pick him up or get him anywhere, really. I mean, maybe one or two leagues. But it was just something that I wish I exposed myself to, because Paul Skeens has been unbelievable. Now, him and Imanaga are going to have to fight it out for the rookie of the year, I think. And mainly because Imanaga's done it for so long, since the beginning of the year, and Skeens has done this for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Skeens is primed to be the NL Rookie of the Year winner. I mean, it really is. As long as he doesn't, like, have multiple explosions, like, Imanaga would still have an under 2 ERA if he didn't give up 10 earned runs in one start.
Yeah.
So, you know, Imanaga had one bad start, and his numbers are still amazing. You know, a 2.97 ERA, a 1.11 whip, 98 Ks in 97 innings, 11 quality starts. Like, Imanaga's been fantastic. But Paul Skeens is just the next ace. Like, do you think Paul Skeens is the first pitcher drafted next year in fantasy?
No.
No? Okay, who do you think?
My money is still on Zach Wheeler.
Okay. Because, I mean, Paul Skeens is making a case, man.
He's top five for sure. I don't think there's a reason he isn't a top five pitcher who's drafted next season.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because Spencer Strider obviously is in limbo.
Yes.
And, yeah, you know, Corbin Burns has been great, but not like the overwhelming ace that he once was. Luis Castillo kind of took a step back. Gausman took a step back. All these guys, Gerrit Cole just came back from injury and he's been okay. So, yeah, there's really, you know, a title up for taking, and Zach Wheeler and Tyler Glasnow and Paul Skeens and Spencer Strider are all in the mix. You know, that's going to be close to see who takes that title, because Paul Skeens has been unreal.
Yeah. I mean, Sandy's going to be back next season. I mean, the hype around Sandy might be a little muted because obviously he's coming back from Tommy John, but there are a lot of really good pitchers who are hurt right now.
And yeah, I mean, Shane McClanahan's still coming back. Shohei Ohtani still coming back. There's a lot of great pitchers out there.
Yeah. That being said, though, I think the hype on Skeens is completely deserved. And if he does get drafted as a top five pitcher next season, of course, assuming the second half of the season goes as well as the first half of the season,
right?
Like, I cannot complain with that sort of hype around his draft pick. Like, it's completely deserved.
Yeah, I wouldn't bat an eyelash if he was taken as the first overall starting pitcher in fantasy. I get it. It makes sense. His strikeout rate's ridiculous. So, yeah. I mean, I don't blame that one bit. So, Paul Skeens, hat off to you. Incredible season so far. I think you should start the All-Star game just to get the most eyes on you, because you are the future of baseball in terms of pitching. So, hopefully they'll do right by you and Torey Lovello will be able to make you start the NL All-Star team game. And we'll see. I mean, we'll see. But that wraps up all of the performances from this past week, and it's time to get into streamers for next week. John, what pitchers are you recommending this time?
Yeah, kind of weird week for streamers because obviously we have the All-Star break starting on Monday. So the only games are Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And of course, we're kind of just basing this completely on speculation on who's going to pitch. And then, of course, typically because, you know, there is that four-day break, it's usually ace day that Friday. It, you know, teams kind of reset their rotations and their number one pitcher, usually the guys going. So most of those guys are already rostered, but we are going to try to get some streamer potentials for you guys. And we're going to start off with JP Sears, 8% on Yahoo, 5% on ESPN. I laughed just a little bit because JP Sears, a lot of PLV hype around him at the beginning of the season. You know, not that he was going to be ever like a top 30 pitcher, but that he was kind of pitching above his weight class, or he had the potential to pitch above his weight class. And unfortunately, he has not done that. His ERA is terrible. His whip is terrible. His team is also pretty terrible. So there's just no wins there. But that being said, he gets the Angels on Friday if he starts. All these have a caveat if he starts. And the last time he faced the Angels, he got a win, 5 innings, 6 strikeouts. And the Angels might be one of the few teams that Sears might have an over 50% chance to get a win. Yes, the Angels are technically three games ahead of Oakland. So this is really a matchup of two bad teams. But anytime that happens, you can give a little bit of an edge to a better starting pitcher from Oakland in terms of potentially winning that game. So, yeah, JP Sears. And then I kind of tease this a little bit. Jose Quintana, 21% on Yahoo, 8% on ESPN. He gets Colorado on Sunday. So if you're listening to this on Saturday, pick him up if you can. But according to Roster Resource, he's actually scheduled to go against Miami next Friday, which is kind of weird. I don't know if that's actually going to happen. But if he does get Miami, again, he just shoved against the Nationals. He's probably going to shove against the Rockies. And if Francisco Alvarez is catching next Friday and Jose Quintana is the pitcher, it's a no-brainer start. So go for that. And then Frankie Montas, 24% on Yahoo, 13% on ESPN. If you were hoping for a Montas resurgence season this year, he just didn't get that season. Obviously, he's in Cincinnati, which would be the worst place for a pitcher to have a resurgence season. But he is away from home. He's facing the Nationals. And they're just not a very good team. And so maybe you steal a win here. Just don't expect much else from this start.
So I like the list. I'm going to rank them as such. Jose Quintana 1, just because, once again, if Francisco Alvarez is catching, I think he's going to be great and do well, especially against those matchups. They're softball matchups, so make sure you grab Quintana. Then I'm going to go Frankie Montas, and then I'm going to go JP Sears. So I like those three in that order. And then for hitters, for me, I have just two names. One is the one that I mentioned earlier, Rhys Hines of the Reds. He's 33% roster on Yahoo. I told you more about him earlier on in the podcast, but he has a great power-speed combo that you can utilize for fantasy. He's on a hot streak right now, so you might as well ride it out. He's not going to be someone for the long term that we think he could be, but very unlikely, so just keep that in mind. But right now, he is someone that you might want to pick up and ride for the hot streak. And then we have Max Schumann of the Athletics. He's 8% rostered on Yahoo and has second base, shortstop, and outfield eligibility. This one is mainly for the deeper leagues out there, the 9-hitter for the Oakland A's. Schumann has great positional eligibility. He's got 5 home runs and 9 stolen bases on the year. And for those in OBP or points leagues, he excels in that format rather than average leagues. In the last 2 weeks, Schumann has scored 5 runs, hit 2 homers, knocked in 7 RBI, stole 5 bases, and has a .429 OBP. Pretty good if you ask me. So now is the time to grab him if you're in a deeper league or need some help in OBP or stolen bases for a roto league. He's getting everyday playing time. Although he's batting 9th for one of the worst teams in baseball, he still can provide some good value, especially with those positional eligibilities. So Max Schumann is a name for you if you are in those deeper leagues and are looking for a hot bat. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you all go, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKe, that's THEJOHNKE. And you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal, that's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed and to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. And please, once again, leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for PitcherList Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the PitcherList Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We'll be back most likely in 2 weeks, because if we do an episode next week, it might just be an interview because it is the All-Star break and we won't have much to talk about. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.